It is Saturday, January 14th, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today we're doing Geek News and, of course, taking your calls.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool.
This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the Arum with me are geeks John Tracy, Technical Support Engineer at Surf Control, Sean Cleveland, Techno Marketer Manager at NVIDIA, Miles Elam, Technical Trainer at Surf Control, Drew Meyer, Product Manager at Network Appliance. We also have some phone call joining people, and those people are, Chris Dunphy, Software Entrepreneur and Business Developer, or a Slacker, and Dee Dee Hubbard, who is a, she's a student with her program.
She's a genius.
But she's in New York. Dee Dee and Chris, welcome. And the geeks, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. And now off the air.
You guys getting static?
We're getting static on the headphone system, but it wasn't being broadcast. So all that silence was just because we couldn't hear anything. And when you take away audio, you confuse people. Okay, in any case.
That's what we're supposed to be confused about today.
That's what we're supposed to be confused about. You got that.
I'm confused.
Nice. We're going to be taking calls with questions in technology during the second half. But right now, we're going to do some geek news. And I'd like to start with
Drew.
Hi, Drew.
Okay, good morning, guys. Well, first thing, I think sort of a public service announcement. We had a very clever listener, not a reader, but a listener write into us and say, hey, your URLs that you passed out last week about the free antivirus are a little confusing because there is a squatter sitting on the domain freegrysoft.com, and that's actually a search engine, kind of a flaky one at that. So I would not go there.
What is a squatter?
A squatter is a person who buys a domain name because it's similar, like Yahoo with maybe three O's, and they sit there, and then they essentially tell Yahoo, if you want to buy this domain, you have to pay us lots of money. Because when people fat finger the term Yahoo, or they make a mistake.
Or right now, recently I looked at whitehouse.com, and it had been changed over to be an ad site. So its sole purpose in life is people hitting the wrong, trying to go to the whitehouse.gov, going to the wrong site, they get the ad revenue, someone clicks on it, and it serves no actual purpose.
And free Grysoft is like that. We mentioned this free antivirus software last week, Grysoft, and the URL that we mentioned was free.grysoft.com. But when you go to grysoft.com...
Free Grysoft.com.
Oh, wait a minute. We got to be really clear about this.
When you go right now, when you go to freegrysoft.com, which is not the place you should go, it looks like it's right. I mean, the title of the page is the right URL, but the headline
is cheesy. Our listener was able to sniff her way past that.
How are you spelling Grysoft? Is it with a Y, with an I?
With an I.
Also, if you go to www.grysoft.com, it looks like you get the same people who put up freegrysoft.com.
Yeah. So Grysoft, freegrysoft.com, when you go there, what I'm trying to say is, that's really important, is that it says AVG Free Edition. It looks like it's where I'm supposed to be. How do you know? How did our listener know that this was fake?
She just, I don't know, her gut instinct. She's a sharp one. Our listeners are all sharp, you know?
It's true.
So anyway, the bottom line is go to free.grysoft.com.
And it should resolve to /doc/1. Seriously.
And if you want to be really clear, just go to the company itself, www.grysoft.com. Grysoft, www.grysoft.com. And from there, just click on downloads and free. And we were trying to save that misery, but added more. And that's the confusion that happened. So anyways, the root URL, of course, is mostly more safe because you won't make as many mistakes and it's shorter. So that's a great AVG software.
AVG is antivirus
something.
I don't know what the G is. That's
it's probably for Grysoft.
Maybe so.
Oh, I like that.
So
like
it's their own thing. I would just, yeah. It's antivirus software. It's free.
What's that, Dee?
Might stand for great.
Great. Groovy.
Dee, are you using AVG?
No, actually, with NYU, everyone gets a free license of Norton antivirus.
Oh, we should just all go to NYU.
And that's at State College in New York? Is that right?
That state college, yeah. That little state school up there in the Northeast. Dee Dee, we think you're doing great work out there.
And Dee Dee's now actually employed by NYU as a... What's your technical term, Dee Dee?
I am a resident researcher.
Woohoo! focusing on.
What are you researching?
I am the programming specialist.
You know, if you want to see some amazing cutting-edge stuff that people are doing in the arts and technology, itp.nyu.edu is a great place. That's where DD is. Okay, let's go on to the next news story. Thank you for keeping us up to date with Grisoft's free software.
Actually, I have a news story. That was just an announcement. A pre-news warm-up. So,
oh, my goodness.
I think...
monopolizing all the time. See how it is, Drew.
I'm trying to do our listeners a favor here by not infecting them. The million-dollar homepage, which was an ad gimmick, I think we talked about this maybe last week or 2 weeks ago, where a guy who's 21 years old, an English fellow, put together a website, a single page, and it gave him more than $1 million.
Just to raise a little money for college.
Yeah.
Now he's probably throwing college away.
Okay, Drew,
retiring.
That was 2 weeks ago's news. What's new about it?
What's new about it is that it was attacked on Friday with a denial-of-service attack, which is a manufactured attack on a website where it simulates thousands and thousands of computers all hitting the same website at the same time. And the attack started Wednesday night and grew into by a zombie army, grew into early Thursday as many as 100,000 computers for all over the world.
Now, that seems kind of vague for... I'm sure some of the listeners are going, what is he talking about?
You know what? I'm going, what is he talking about? Miles, please enlighten us.
Zombie computers. You know what's sad is your computer could be a zombie computer.
What?
Anyone.
Okay. This is scary.
A zombie computer is, for example, when you don't have a firewall in your system or you haven't patched Windows, basically, if a hacker gets into your system, they may not try to get your personal information like your credit card number. People say, well, I don't have anything on my computer that's important. Well,
your computer, processing power.
Yeah, your computer is important. Because if they take control of it, they will turn it into what's known as a zombie, which is they will take remote control of your computer and use it for their own purposes.
So
such
your computers,
as
you make it sound like
websites.
You make it sound like there's this guy who's actually hacking into your computer, and it's not. It's most likely a virus or a Trojan that's been in
well,
this program.
Well, it was a person in a dark room with nefarious intent making a virus or worm that would propagate and
so
give
an evil
your
an
computer.
Evil necromancer taking over your zombie computer. So basically,
if your computer is crawling and your performance is just not what it should be,
you're probably a zombie.
Your computer could have been taken over and things, is being used for other purposes.
And when we say other purposes, basically somebody else can do other things with their computer. And even and some of them are pretty smart about how they do it. They'll try not to let you know that your computer is being infected, so it'll operate when you're not using it as much. In any case, so one of the two major things that those things, I mean, the ones that hit the news all the time is those computers will have a virus and start emailing or searching for other machines to infect with that virus so that more zombies are created for the person that wrote it or controls that your machine. And the other choice that one of the other choices that a person with control over a zombie network, if you will, could do is attack a web server and take it down by sheer volume of requests.
And there's blackmailing that happens.
Right. Uh-huh. Extortion.
Oh, yeah, the digital extortion.
Yeah.
And in fact, in this case, it turns out there's no digital extortion request. It's just somebody doing it.
I know why they're doing it. I know exactly why.
Why?
They're jealous.
They're jealous of this great, genius little guy that just made a great little site that made him millions of dollars.
I can build 100,000 zombie army, but I can't make any money.
Right. And for a point of reference, it is kind of scary, but a point of reference for the audience out there, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of computers have been compromised as zombies.
It's,
so if you don't have any virus software, and if you haven't patched your Windows machine in the past 2 months, for example, you can pretty much assume that you actually have been hacked.
Yeah, you can assume that.
It's
that
scary.
Even if you install Windows and you don't enable your firewall or install antivirus, say you're going to wait a day or two, it doesn't take long.
No.
You could be compromised in minutes if you're connected to the internet.
Just unplug now.
Now that
just
we're successful, just unplug it. Don't ever plug it. Now that we've successfully scared everybody, let's go on to a news story.
Just make sure you've got antivirus software. Yeah, Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just thinking they should market it as anti-zombie software. The marketing angles are great. Could have Jeff Foxworthy do a whole routine. You might have a zombie PC if get people having fun with this and be aware.
The Apple guys would be all, if you have anything but an Apple, you have a zombie computer.
Get digital shotgun antivirus software, anti-zombie software.
Anti-zombie software, I love it.
This is Geek Speak, not Zombie Speak, and we'll go on with the news. I'm going to go to John. Hi.
Hi. Speaking of Apple finally surpassed Dell in market share. Oh, wait, that's market value.
Uh-huh.
I read that at first. I was pretty shocked.
Apple breaking news on GeekSpeak.
Apple has enjoyed an increase from their standard bottom of the rung market share. And I say this as an Apple fanatic. I've been an Apple fanatic ever since.
Market value, not market share.
And they finally surpassed market value which means they're now worth $72 billion as opposed to Dell's $71,970,000.
That's the market cap for the company, right?
Right.
All outstanding shares.
And of course, that's on paper. I'm sure that has to do a lot with the iPod.
Oh, that's their huge revenue bringer. And the iTunes Store has also brought in a huge amount of revenue. Not necessarily profit, but revenue.
Yeah. Great.
You know, yeah, I got an Apple story, too.
Okay, go ahead.
So, Apple did their...
Now, this is Sean. He's not a Mac fanatic. Go on, sir.
No. But Apple did their commercial with Intel. Actually, they did it without Intel. And Intel found out about the commercial at the last minute, supposedly. But anyway, the commercial says, the Intel chip, for years, it's been trapped inside PCs, inside dull boxes, dutifully performing dull little tasks, when it could have been doing so much more.
Zombified.
I want to know, what could it be doing in an Apple Macintosh system that it hasn't been doing in a PC?
It's very easy.
It's not playing.
It's running OS 10. That's exactly.
It's just not in a sexy box. Is that it?
That's right. The box is not pretty enough.
Making the big candy-colored, you know, buttons to push.
That's what it is. Because, you know, it's certainly not the games, because those aren't on the Mac platform.
Oh, that's
and that's why people buy computers.
I'm just saying, they're dull boxes, so a computer's only as good as you know, if it's pretty.
John, are there Macintosh games?
Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway.
Like Tetris, come on.
So what's happened?
There actually have been studies that said that people will use products, items, objects, computers, programs that look prettier.
We are like visually oriented.
It's easier to sort of get into your focus, your sort of flow moment.
Yeah, it's something about design being important, I think, is a...
So there's been no design on the PC side?
Comparatively.
Sean,
have you
pressed start to shut down?
And with that, we'll go on to the next news story. Miles.
But anyway, I wasn't done yet.
Okay, go ahead, Sean.
So, of course, Intel is selling processors across the market now, and they really, I guess they got really upset because...
Yeah, I would assume...
You could have this other business, too.
It's funny, because the way that first aired... So, in the keynote address... Actually, I'll let... Chris, what was the keynote address at Macworld like?
Oh, okay. Let's jump into the keynote. It was. You know, Steve Jobs always puts on an amazing show. And if any of the listeners want to, you know, I think you can go to Apple and find the video of the keynote and stream it. He's outclasses anyone in doing big production keynotes and
or the dog and pony show as it's called sometimes.
I guess in this case the pony would be the CEO of Intel who Steve Jobs managed to convince to show up in a bunny suit. Yeah, that'd be I guess the bunny and pony show here.
For those listeners who don't know what a bunny suit is, it's a class 100 clean room suit. Totally.
It's one of those white suits.
Like a space suit.
Yeah, how did that come off, Chris?
It came off fairly well, though.
Did he seem like a clown jumping out on stage with this thing on, or did it seem, you know, what's your take on that?
There was kind of this big puff of smoke, and the guy in the bunny suit and the full hat comes walking across the stage to Steve Jobs and hands him a big chip wafer. So it was a little melodramatic, and then he pulls off the hat, and it's the CEO of Intel, and he's like, "Intel is ready, Steve."
It was real. I mean, from the I looked at the stream. It was as silly as Chris just described. So the CEO of a major corporation, Intel, comes out on stage in a full white get-up suit and takes off his hat thing and then says a stupid line. I mean, that's really what it was.
Now, never mind that CEO behind the curtain.
It was kind of ridiculous. But right after they have the conversation and Steve announces the laptop and the iMac with the Intel processor in it, which, by the way, has a lot of issues we should probably address a little bit later in the show, when he gets off stage, that's when Steve plays a commercial that ticks off most of Intel's business. You know, basically insulting anybody else that Intel works with.
Yeah.
We have this great new partnership between Apple and Intel. Yay, yay, yay. Thank you very much for participating. And says goodbye to the CEO. He walks off stage. And now a commercial to do, you know, insult all of his customer base. It was just really strange. And I'm sitting there going, did Intel know about this or not? I mean, Steve, Chris, did that hit you when you watched that commercial?
I was a little bit... I was a little bit surprised that it wasn't nearly as cool as past Apple commercials. Like,
yeah.
You know, when they first showed the one with the Mini-Me and the Chinese basketball player, and, like, I saw that commercial, I was like, oh, my God, that is, like, such a brilliant commercial. This one was just kind of, like, a little spidey and small and like, okay, yeah, big deal. It's an Intel chip, and why are you making fun of dull little boxes with dull little tasks?
Which are 98% of the market share in computers. I mean,
Just going to piss people off. It didn't get a huge response from the audience.
I think the best response I heard about that from that was from Sean, who said, "Well, AMD processors aren't in great dull little boxes. They're in supercomputers." It's very good, Sean. Thank you. Okay, let's go on the next news story. Miles, go for it, man.
For the first time in 15 years, a European nation, in this case France, is starting to build a nuclear reactor. A new one.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Wait, now, France is more likely to be built in the next decade.
If I'm not mistaken, France's nuclear power supply, nuclear reactors, are really much more advanced than ours.
Yes, and they're also about 75% of their total electricity generation as well for that country.
They rely on nuclear energy quite a bit. So they're creating one more. They're going to have another 10 more online.
Well, they have six more likely to be built in the next decade, and they're planning on developing safer, more efficient, what are called fourth-generation reactors, and that will be by 2020.
And do you know a little bit about what a fourth-generation reactor is?
They're just moving more toward that, and I'm forgetting the name for it, but...
Using this fuel source longer.
Using the fuel source longer, also relying on properties of nature for safety. In other words, if you stop doing anything, in other words, if you take electricity away in terms of the monitoring systems, if you take away the coolant, if something goes wrong...
If any system fails.
Right. It relies on, if you leave it alone... Nothing happens.
The laws of physics say that it will stop reacting.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's a negative coefficient. That's what I was thinking of.
That was great, because I'm glad that you didn't say say negative coefficient, because then I'd have to say, what's that? So I'm glad you described it first and then gave us the definition. And so these reactors, I mean, how are they, how in the realm of governmental politics, if you will, is France being, are people going, France is not with it? Or is everybody going, oh yeah, France knows what's going on and everybody else isn't with it?
Well, it depends. I mean, France has been at odds with the U.S. for a great variety of things, energy policy being one of them. But
like our reliance on coal and
right. Not getting at the same time, the U.S. sits on a mountain of coal. Right. We have enough coal for hundreds of years of electricity generation.
Of destroying the atmosphere, right.
Yes, but it generates CO2. Mm-hmm. France does not have a mountain of coal underneath them, and so in terms of natural resources, they're much more limited, much more stuck. So nuclear ended up being we need something.
Right.
And so as such, all of their research and development has gone in there, and that's why they have
One of the things that really ticks people off here in this country about our nuclear power is that we use our fuel, and then once it's at a stage that's still extremely dangerous, we put it in vats of water, and then we take over mountains like Yucca Mountain and are theoretically going to put it in there at some point and just store
it. But now they're just in cooling pools at the different...
Right, but right now they're just distributed all over the country in different pools of water, and... France could use our spent fuel, if it was safer to transport it, to actually fuel their systems. I mean, they're going to be using, because our fuel, our disposable resource is still hot, is still radioactive, France is going to be at a stage where their actual final output is much less dangerous than what our output is.
Bit of a simplification, but...
I'm trying to be simple, because of course we're simpletons here on Geek Speak.
It's just like modern wood-burning stoves. They have catalytic converters that capture what's been burnt the first time, mm-hmm. to reburn it again, because there's still combustible material in there.
Right, but this goes along with adherence to the Kyoto Treaty, for example, France being a signatory of that treaty, where they're trying to reduce CO2 emissions, and nuclear power does not generate any CO2. So that's how that works out.
All right, I think we lost Dee Dee through. I must have just lost her connection. Dee Dee, game sales? What's up with game sales?
Oh, well, the U.S. game sales hit a record $10.5 billion in 2005, which is up from $10.3
billion. Billion with a B, huh?
Billion.
$10 billion in games sold in 2005?
Yeah, most of this is due to handheld gaming. Go figure. I don't know if any of you are into handheld gaming. I'm not, personally.
Is that like the PSP?
Well, I play chess sometimes.
52% of the handheld sales were actually the five-year-old Game Boy Advance.
The older Game Boy.
Yes.
Which is called Game Boy Advance. I love it when technology's like new, cutting edge, you know? And then later it's like the new old system. Then you got to change the acronym and stuff. In any case, $10 billion. Very cool. Thank you. Let's go
which
ahead
is
and
bigger than Hollywood.
Do one more news story. We're going to Yeah?
I think I'd like to follow up that last news story with France's nuclear power with California's new initiative that was passed this week. The California Public Utilities Commission passed a solar initiative program where they're going to be making available $2.8 billion for solar power. It's going to subsidize, like, if you want to go out and get a solar system to put on your roof, this will be money available for you to do that. They're also going to be having, later, they'll be having funds available to do solar hot water, which I think is really important because most solar hot water is run by gas. I'm sorry, most hot water heaters are gas-powered.
Sure,
unless
natural
you've got
gas.
Instantaneous. Right. As the latest hurricanes have shown us, that's a very vulnerable system.
Wait, indirectly meaning that a lot of our natural gas supplies come from the region that got hit by the two hurricanes.
Yes, and which drastically affected gas prices and oil prices for heating.
Right.
You know, heating oil and also natural gas, because that's where a lot of our natural gas comes from. So they're also making, for the first time available later this year, they'll be making available rebates for solar hot water heating, which is great. So they'll reduce the heating.
And hot water heating with solar is a lot cheaper investment than you would think.
Yes.
I mean, the one thing, though, is that it really doesn't function late. I mean, it doesn't function when you have darkness, like at night.
But you don't have to be totally dependent on it. You can still use gas, but you do all the preheating by the sun.
Right. If you think about it, you've got this 80-gallon heater, this 80-gallon tank that you're heating.
You're dumping
constantly.
Cold water
You've got a ton of mass. Well, not a ton, really, but, you know, 80 gallons of water weighs a lot. You're heating that up continuously. You're always keeping that hot. So instead, if you could preheat that water through a roof unit to, a 90% of the temperature you need it at, and then use your hot water heater, or better yet, an instantaneous water heater to heat it the rest of the way, the energy savings is tremendous.
And what we're talking about is the solar, just basically large black storage, water storage devices on the ceiling. The sun hits them, heats it up. Sorry, on the roof. Yeah, and the ceiling would be harder to heat it up.
So
that heats it up.
So this is available over the next 10 years. $300 million available this year. It's going to be increasing, peaks out 2009 at $350 million available, and then it goes down last year is 2016 when there's $100 million available.
We've had a solar expert on the show before. Is that Solar Dan?
Solar Mike
Aronson.
Solar Mike Aronson. So if you want to get systems installed in this region, the Central Coast of California, that's a good source. But I would say if you want to take advantage of this, contact your local solar store or Solar Mike if you're in this area. I think that would be great. John, you don't have any solar energy going on at your house, is that correct?
Not yet. We would love to. That's on the
doing
list.
That? Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay. After your bathroom's finished.
Yes.
Geek Speak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full service business center in Felton offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivering, office supplies, Notary Public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. You're listening to Geek Speak. We've got a large contingent of geeks this morning. We've got Miles, Sean, John, Drew, and in New York, we've got Dee Dee, and up in San Francisco, we've got Chris Stumpfy. We'll be having to say goodbye to Dee Dee as we take phone calls, so I want to say thank you very much, Dee Dee, for joining us today.
No problem.
But stay with us until we actually take calls. And if you want to be one of those calls that kicks Dee Dee off the air, which you should be anyway because it's about you at this point, the numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us to send us an email. We're taking your calls and questions of technology. I'll give out that contact information again in just a second, but I just want to enforce that we can take any question that you might be having trouble with. You probably have one of the most complicated machines ever made in your house. A lot of us do, computers. And with that complexity comes pain. And we want to help turn that pain into pleasure, or at least subdue it a little bit.
This is rated show this week.
this is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. Tomorrow morning on Weekend Edition from NPR News, Taylor Branch published the first installment of his landmark history of the civil rights movement 18 years ago. Now he's brought out a third and final volume with focuses on America from 1965 to 1968. Leanne Hansen talks with the Pulitzer Prize-winning historian about his life's work. Also a report on the status of the Stardust mission as the spacecraft returns to Earth this weekend. That's tomorrow morning on Weekend Edition from NPR News, starting at 7 a.m. here on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. KOSP co-sponsors New Year's Music and the Arts Festival, presented by the Santa Cruz Children's Learning Museum every weekend in January. The Children's Learning Museum will feature music from all genres. Bands like Wally's Swing World, the Santa Cruz Youth Symphony, Cosano, the Pleasure Kings, and Jim Greiner, and Hands on Drumming. Come by and check out the new location at 131 Front Street in downtown Santa Cruz. For more information, call 420-1765 or visit online at childrenslearningmuseum.org. The calls can come in now. We're here to help you with your problems, technology related. Phone numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Rick Fillman is answering the phones. Just call him up. Say, I want to be on the air because I've got this problem, or I want to inform the geeks that they're completely mistaken on this. We'll take your call. We'll put you on air. The phone number is again, 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. GeekSpeak is supported by CruiseIO, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about CruiseIO membership is available online at CruiseIO.com or by calling 459-6301. And we are ready to take calls on the GeekSpeak program. So goodbye, Dee Dee.
Bye.
Bye.
And we will go right to line one. Welcome to GeekSpeak, and I am behind, so who are you? You're Tom Watsonville. Hi, welcome. Tom from Watsonville, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yeah, here I am.
Hi.
You can hear me now, right?
No problem. Welcome.
Okay. Hey, I hear that when Mac goes to the Intel chip, that it's going to become automatically more vulnerable to viruses and worms and stuff. Is this, what do you think?
Not true.
I don't necessarily think they're related at all. Sean,
I think it's the OS
that's the software.
Who told me that was a Mac developer told me that.
Okay, let's let Miles address this. Miles.
Theoretically, that is true, because viruses a lot of times will actually input and be matched to the CPU. One of the advantages to having a PowerPC-based Mac was the fact that it was a completely different CPU architecture.
Right.
So, yes, you are more vulnerable. However, the fact that you are
It's x86-based.
Right. However, the fact that you are using a Unix-based operating system, which has different set of permissions than Windows does, or a different security model, will make you less of a target.
Additionally, let's talk about most of the vulnerabilities that are available for the Windows XP system. For Windows, they really, a lot of them have to do with vulnerabilities in the operating system itself, which Macintosh doesn't have. But also, sometimes
the applications actually the biggest.
The applications, that's right. And lots of times that's even script based. So you're not really sending a compiled virus. Lots of times the virus is actually scripts. And a scripting environment can work on any operating system as long as the application, there's an application
the interpreter
to run it,
there's
an interpreter. Yeah. And a lot of the viruses that I have looked at, that I've received and said, oh, how are they doing this? It's a VB script, which will not work on Apple. So I would say that theoretically, yes, you're more vulnerable. You could definitely see people possibly trying to run viruses of that nature, but there's going to be so many problems with actually doing anything with the computer on a Macintosh versus a Windows machine. Like writing a virus that will work effectively in infecting your machine on a Windows machine, the difference between doing that and writing one that would work on both is extreme.
And if you're comparing the vulnerability of, say, Safari to Internet Explorer and then Apple Mail or OS X Mail and Outlook Express, I mean, it's worlds different.
Right.
I see. Okay.
So I'm going to go with theoretically possibly more vulnerable if you're using an Intel processor
or
on a Macintosh.
Or there will be more. But
theoretically. Yeah. But practically, you won't probably see any effect at all based on this.
Well,
that you will be more vulnerable is these new Intel Macs in theory will at some point be able to run full on Windows on them, and so if you're running full on Windows in addition to Mac OS, your Windows might be more likely to get infected.
That assuming that someone hacks the Macintosh hardware to do that.
No, the virtual PC will be supporting full speed running Windows on the Intel Macs in the not-too-distant future.
Since it's not going to have to emulate the hardware
I've got it from... What's that?
Since it's not going to have to emulate hardware anymore.
Yeah, so you don't have to emulate hardware. So instead of emulation being really dog-slow, it'll be as fast as, or nearly as fast as a laptop or desktop running Windows natively.
Thank you, Chris, for filling that in. Let's go ahead and go to Watsonville. Judith, welcome to GeekSpeak.
I sort of have a follow-up question on what they were saying, but then I have the other question that I called up about.
All right, what's the follow-up question first?
The follow-up question has to do, I have a Mac, And I was wondering, is the Internet Explorer browser really vulnerable to viruses and things like that? I know it's
on a Macintosh.
Macintosh.
No, it's not a very good browser, but it's not really vulnerable to.
Yeah, I try and
avoid. And it's not supported anymore.
Right? Yeah.
I try and avoid using it.
Are you running OS 10?
I have OS 10.
You use Safari or Firefox? Yeah.
And I use Safari or Firefox.
But with regard to security, there's no problems with Internet Explorer for the Mac. That's a perfectly safe browser, at least compared to the other browsers on the Mac.
Judith, what was your primary question?
The primary question was, I have dial-up access, and asked a question some weeks ago about the speed of different browsers.
Yes, I recall.
And somebody there said something about a Google browser.
I'm talking actually about a Google Speed Enhancer thing. What's that called, Miles?
The Google Accelerator.
Google Accelerator, yes.
And is that available someplace?
I would assume it's available by Google. Can someone take a look at Google Accelerator?
I don't know if it's available for the Mac, though, is it?
Oh, I don't know if it is.
I know it is a Windows product, but I don't know if they have a Mac version.
And so where would I go to look for that? I guess I would go to Google and...
You could Google it.
Is it a program you have to buy? buy it as a program?
No, it's a free application. But our New York correspondent, Dee Dee, who is now unfortunately... she says it's a closed beta, meaning that it's not actually released and available to everybody, and it's only by invite.
I'm at webaccelerator.google.com and download now.
And Dee Dee also said...
I'm downloading it.
And he's a Mac user, so...
Is it a Mac version?
Yeah.
Okay, but wait a second. Before you run it...
System requirements...
Win XP... and Windows 2000 Service Pack 3.
John, stop downloading that. let me just say one thing about Google Web Accelerator. Uh-huh. And I said this 2 weeks ago when I mentioned this with you. Dee Dee made it very concise. She said GWA, the acronym for Google Web Accelerator, is evil. That's all she really wrote. And what she means by that is it's not playing pretty with the web applications of today. There are a lot of web apps up there, mostly like mail clients and stuff, like Yahoo Mail, things of that nature. Some of the links on those pages actually delete messages or forward messages automatically. And you don't want something in your computer that pretends like it's the browser of you and does things like click on links for you that deletes messages. So that's what the problem with Google Web Accelerator, and that's why it's in beta, or one of the reasons. I would recommend not using it. I think that the best solution for you, because one of the things that it does is it's going to download a lot of content. It's going to saturate your connection to the Internet. But if you're moving slowly through the Internet, it will seem like the Internet's very fast. So it's very appealing from that perspective. But I would say, since you're on a Macintosh, don't worry about it. You can't run it. And I would stay away from it because it's really in a beta form.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've got some calls, but I really wanted to mention a story that I just touched on, which was a space issue. John, can you tell us about the Stardust. The Stardust mission. What is the Stardust mission?
Stardust mission was launched 7 years ago to go see a comet called, it's not called Wild 2, that's how it's spelled. It's pronounced Wild.
Wild.
Wild 2. Wild 2. It went out, it collected some dust from behind it. As the comet was streaking in, you've all seen pictures of comets with the jet of gas streaming out the back. They parked the satellite, the spacecraft behind it, put out this big paddle of aerogel, which is like this really super non-dense gel, and it captured a stream of particles from the gases that were being jetted out of the comet. Put those back inside and then headed back to Earth. So tomorrow, it's returning to Earth from its 7-year mission. It's going to be landing in Salt Lake area, mm-hmm. In between Salt Lake and Nevada. There's this big flat nothing area. It's going to be landing in there. They're hoping
the salt
it's
going
to... Right, the salt flats. They're hoping it's going to parachute down and land softly, but it's coming in at 6 times faster than a speeding bullet.
Hate that. So it needs to man.
I remember the last time, didn't they crater the whole
last
thing?
The last one, it was a dirt dart.
Oh, no.
Because the piece was installed backwards.
Let's hope that this thing lands effectively. Let me just clarify the whole jet stream that coming out of comets. A comet, as it gets close to the sun, starts boiling off its gases because the sun is hot. Those gases then are affected by the solar winds from the sun. So the tail of a comet is not behind its trajectory of travel. It is always facing away from our star, the
supersonic
sun.
Solar winds have pressure, so they push it away.
They push away the particles, and so that jet of stream is actually just particles being pushed away from the sun, if you will. Okay, so we had somebody that called and just asked off air why are we doing something that we weren't supposed to be doing? Because I'm listening to you guys not because of your banter, but because I want to know about Prius and hybrid technology. Because last week I said, we're talking about Prius and hybrid technology on Geek Speak next week. And here it is next week on Geek Speak, Saturday, and we're not talking about that. And the reason is our guest, who's just an expert on Priuses, is extremely busy at work selling them. So he works for Toyota in Capitola.
No, I think he's manufacturing.
He's the head mechanic.
Mechanic. Oh, okay.
Not that they ever break.
So
this is the Prius specialist for, like, the West, like, Northwest Coast. Yeah.
So when I called him months ago and said he wanted to be on the show, he's like, yeah. I was like, great. It'll be Friday, the blah, blah, blah. And then as we changed to our Saturday time frame, I sent him an email and said, he's cool Saturday. But when we actually called him this week and said, okay, we're ready for Saturday.
He was ready for Friday. But
he was ready for Friday.
And you know what? I did talk. I met him with him and talked to him. And the guy's a fountain of information. I was just, I just kept asking him questions and he knew answers.
So what I'm going to do,
this will be a fun
show.
If we
can't get him live on the show, we'll go and we'll interview him earlier at some other time in the week. Maybe even go into the shop and take a look at everything.
We can get him. He's just got to get his work schedule out in the next few weeks. So stay tuned, listeners. We'll have Prius information.
We've got lots of shows lined up. We'll move them around a little bit to make sure that we get him in. So just keep on listening to Geek Speak and hear our fascinations.
We want to hear about it as much as you do.
Definitely. There's actually
a little bit of Prius news about go ahead, Miles. I think you know a little bit more about
let me take some calls because we're pretty full up on calls, and I'd like to take these poor people that are waiting for us to get to them. So let me see who's up on the list. Scrolling. Okay, let's see. I think we just took Judith, so now we're going to talk to Rick in Monterey. Rick, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello,
you're on.
Great. Yeah, it kind of seems like it should be a very simple task. I've got some data, it's actually their WAV files, and I want to, it's on my G4, and I just want to record onto my DVD burner. I've never used a DVD burner, but it should be about the same, I thought, as CD. And it doesn't seem to be. I got the information on the page here that tells how to do it, and what it says should come up as a dialog box is not coming up.
Okay,
help me through that.
Yeah, there's a couple things that could be happening. The DVD raw, the DVD blank media that you have might not be right for your burner. That's a possibility. But also, are you trying to make an audio DVD?
No, I just want to transfer the files.
As an object? Okay, the prompt is not coming up when you insert the blank DVD?
Not the prompt that they say. Okay, I'm actually in front of it now. And
what's the prompt?
It's DVD plus R, which should work according to this. And
you have a G4? When did you buy it?
It's fairly new.
Fairly new, okay.
Oh, wait, where did it go? Why is it? Okay. Where's my screen? Of course, it's not doing it.
I mean, the reason why we ask when you buy it is because the earlier DVD burners on Macintoshes only supported DVD
-R.
Right, right. Yeah,
so
no, this is.
And when you say it's a G4 new, they haven't been selling tower G4s for quite a while. So is it a tower desktop machine or is it a laptop?
No, not a tower.
It's a laptop.
Laptop.
Okay, and it's kind of got the smooth edges, like the rounded edges?
Yep.
Okay. I think you can support it. So tell you what you do. First off, go up to the Apple icon, upper left-hand corner.
Yep.
Go to About This Computer. Go into the hardware settings, and you'll find somewhere your DVD burner. And when you find your DVD burner, make sure that it says somewhere in there DVD plus R as well as DVD minus R. If it does not, you cannot use that media on that computer. So I think that's the problem. But what's the dialogue say when you stick the DVD in?
It just comes up, iDVD-5 comes up.
Okay.
And it says to create a new project, an existing project.
Okay. So what's happening is the iDVD software is being launched instead of the Finder. Okay, what I would do...
So that's not what I want.
You don't. Are you on Tiger?
Tiger, yes.
Okay, great. When you open a Finder window, so go ahead and eject the disk, cancel out of iDVD. When you open it, and I'm going to describe this to you, but then I'm going to say goodbye to you, so you're going to have to solve it yourself. Open up a folder window in Macintosh. On the left-hand side, there'll be a list of things that you can click on, kind of favorites. Control-click in the blank spot on the left-hand side and say new DVD or new blank DVD or new blank disk.
Okay.
Once you've done that, you'll get a little icon there, and it becomes kind of a virtual folder. You drag anything you want into there, and when you want to finally burn it, you just click on it. So that's the interface to do it. Once you click on it, then once it starts trying, it'll say load the DVD to burn. That's when you want to put the DVD in. Good luck on that. I hope it works out for you.
Just one quick thing. At the very top, you said the folder window?
Yeah, in the Finder.
Oh, in the Finder. Okay, great.
Go to the Finder and open folder. Okay, thank you very
Thanks
much.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
You bet. Bye-bye. Bye. All right, let's see. Who do we have next? Okay, Lynn from Santa Cruz. Welcome to Geek Speak. What can we do you for?
Hello.
Hello.
My question is, since I've got Mac running now on Intel, is the OS actually going to be supported on current Intel motherboards, or are they going to come out with motherboards that us, do-it-selfers can put together our own systems with?
You mean you want to run Macintosh operating system on a Windows machine?
Yeah.
Okay. On an Intel-based machine or AMD?
Yeah.
There are hacks to do that. People are doing it. I've seen it run. But Apple doesn't like it.
Apple is a hardware company. They make software to sell their hardware. I mean,
so they're going to do everything they can to make sure you can't do that. But there are a lot of smart brains in the universe, and who knows whether Apple will win or the smart brains will win that are trying to do what you want to do. I've seen the preliminary operating system, the earlier versions, mm-hmm. running on Intel-based laptops. I mean, it's really cool. You can't run any non-native to that environment work, but I would say that if you want to use a computer for a tool to help you in your other tasks in life, you will want to stick with Windows if you're on Intel or Linux. And if you want to run Macintosh OS, buy a Macintosh. And if you want to play and explore and be a geek about it, yeah, try it out. But don't use it as your primary machine. John, do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be missing the Apple BIOS.
Yep, it's going to be hard.
So the new Mac world is not going to include having, you know, a variety of motherboards that one go out and buy.
It's the same Mac world, different chip.
Yeah, it would be wonderful.
It'll all be locked down.
Yeah. Oh man, I'd love to run it on some of my Windows machines. I'd love to run it on AMD.
But we'll see what the hacking community has to say about it.
Thank you, Lynn, for the call. I mean, there's a lot of people doing it. Don't get me wrong. Okay, we're going to go to Monterey. Rose, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello.
Hello, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking the call. I have a very interesting, should I call it dilemma, maybe?
Sure.
My email, I'm not doing much on a computer, basic email, anyway. My email, when I open up the inbox or new email, whatever, mm-hmm. everything shows up on the screen under my email address. So I don't know who's sending me anything until I open.
And I'm going to ask you some kind of technical. What's your email client?
Is it Outlook or?
Yeah, Outlook.
Okay. Sean, do you know how to turn on different column names in Outlook?
Different column names.
Yeah, what's going on?
If she goes up and right clicks on the headers of each column, then you can add fields.
Okay. Did you understand that?
Well, I'm trying.
Drew, at the top of this, the part where like.
Well, just a quick one. I'm
yeah, it's all the way to
right
the
now,
right,
I'm
actually.
Down.
Okay.
So the header. The column headers that go across the top.
Say,
if you go all the way to the right, there's a little square, a little box.
Okay.
And you click on that, and that's how you can decide which of those you see.
And you want to add a field called from. Right now what you're seeing...
Oh, yeah, okay. Uh-huh.
So add a field called from. What you're seeing is a field called to, and the to field is always you because it's your mail.
Oh.
So it's kind of a confusing thing, but the general concept is that if you're looking at your outgoing mail... You don't really care who it was from,
right?
Because it's always from you.
And you can turn off and on columns by doing that.
Per window.
Yeah. And you might want to maybe see how large an email is when it's sent to you, so you might want to include the size.
I love is attachments, because I keep a lot of my email.
Right.
And it's nice to be able to know which messages had attachments if you're looking for a certain thing.
Right. Because mm-hmm. you can quickly go through them and see which ones.
Yes. Yeah. Good luck on that.
We think that'll work for you. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
I love it when it's a question that we know the answer to. That's rewarding.
We look good as long as she doesn't call back, right?
That's right. As long as she goes, that didn't work on air. You know? If it didn't work, of course, you can always email us. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. We're taking calls. We've got a few more minutes in the show. I'm not going to actually invite anybody else to call in. I think the three people that we have on hold, if you're on hold, hold with us. We'll take your calls. But we will take your email because we can kind of look at that while we're answering calls. So I'm going to go on and we'll go to Carl. And Carl is in Capitola, right? Carl, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, how you doing? Quick one. My son has a Windows Pentium 4, has a wireless keyboard and mouse, the keyboard stopped working last night, and the mouse has been working, and then this morning the mouse stopped working too, and I plugged in
a wired mouse.
Did you plug in the wired mouse when the machine was off?
Well, what I realized, I assumed it would work. I'm a Mac person, but, USB. But this one, it wouldn't work, and I just restarted it, and it was working. So now the mouse, wired mouse works, and so I also plugged in the keyboard just now, but it's not working.
Okay,
just restarted.
You have to do all this keyboard and stuff, plugging and such. Make sure the machine is off. If you...
round PS2 connector. Yeah, you don't want to plug that in when the computer's on.
Okay. Now the other thing, we replaced all the batteries, not working.
You did replace the batteries.
Okay. Yeah.
Did you resync the devices?
You know what? I don't remember which order to do it. I've tried both orders.
You should replace the batteries, and then on the bottom of the keyboard should be a button.
Yeah.
And then on the little remote unit.
Right.
You should press them about the same time.
Oh, okay.
And they should find each other.
Okay.
Yeah.
Give it a shot, anyway.
Let me be clear on how that syncing works. The base station, the thing that actually plugs into your computer, that doesn't need batteries, when you hold that button down, it says, anybody that sends me a connect signal, I will trust.
Okay.
So you hold that button down, then you're on the keyboard, you push the other button,
gotcha.
And that sends the signal, and then they both communicate.
So. But the mouse isn't working either, and that might be a power issue, though.
It could be battery power.
It doesn't hurt to resync them.
But don't forget that if you're unplugging that connector that's the wireless dongle, if you will, for keyboard,
you're going to have to resync it.
Okay. Yeah, you have to resync it. But also, just make sure that you do any plugging and unplugging with a Windows machine while it's off. Unless, of course, it's USB.
Right.
Or FireWire.
Or FireWire, but yeah.
Okay.
Good luck.
I'll give it a whirl.
Thank you so much.
I want him to get a Mac, but that's life.
So. No, yeah. It's
all right. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
He's probably a loser like me.
He probably broke it on purpose.
You know, it's interesting because Macintosh makes things really simple for people. Apple makes things pretty simple for people. Like, you can plug things in and out without really hurting the machine. But if you get comfortable doing that, going to Windows is a little more painful because you've got to be a little
caveat safer. To that. Now you can.
Yes.
Before it was dangerous.
Because you fixed a lot of early Macs.
I
wish Apple had changed the name of the company when they launched OS X. Because when I talk pleasantly about Macintosh computers, I am not talking about anything before OS X. Anything before OS X was a horrible, horrible computer. And that's how I feel about it. And the views expressed in this program are not necessarily those of KOSP. So, Robert from Santa Cruz.
I totally disagree about that.
I think there might be a few people.
That's good, John. I'm glad you disagree with me.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Hi. Hi. What's your question?
Well, I have two questions. One is, I had read somewhere, I think it was in Mercury News or somewhere, where when they were first talking about the new Intel chips and in the Apple laptops, that there was, I think it was something it said about, that there was some piracy prevention thing that was sort of built into the chip so you couldn't copy CDs or DVDs or something. Do you know anything about that?
You're talking about digital rights management. I don't think that Macintosh is doing a lot of digital rights management in hardware. Miles, John, you guys know? Chris, you know?
No, nothing about it.
Nope. Huh. Sorry, we haven't heard the story.
Okay, and then the second thing, I caught a little bit of a question that someone had asked before about burning DVDs.
Yeah.
And I've never done it, and I don't... could you kind of briefly explain... I guess it's about DVDs and CDs. One is... explain about different formats for DVD burning, the plus and minus, all that
stuff. Sure.
And then the other thing is, as far as CDs, why is it that when I make a copy of a CD, like for backup, on a computer, that some DVD players, I mean, some CD players will play CDs I just made and some won't?
Uh-huh.
I know there's two separate questions.
Older CD players are I would say not as good at reading a variety of discs. Miles, you seem to want to address this.
Right. It's there's different quality of discs. They use different inks, different dyes on the disc, and they will be more or less reflective, and some drives are more sensitive to that than others. Some burners will be burning with a slightly more intense laser than others, so you're going to have a difference in reflectivity there. It's if you have newer equipment, they will all pretty much read whatever anybody else has written. But
I've heard rumors that if you have like a home CD player that's playing CDs and you want it to play CDs burned from your computer, that what you want to do is decrease the speed at which your CD player burns the disc.
Uh-huh.
Sean, is that true?
It doesn't make sense to me.
Really?
You know,
because
the problem with with that is a lot of times you're not getting data fast enough when you're burning, and you could get a buffer underrun, and the data, you know, the disk fails. But as far as burn intensity, wow, that's weird.
You need to not air into the mic.
Okay, as far as burn intensity, you know, getting more compatibility by writing slower, it's all digital bits. I mean,
okay, so what I want to address is that the laser sensitivity on older players is not as good. It can't tell the difference between a pit and no pit, which is what's being burnt into the disk
as a
pit.
Maybe that's it.
And if you go slower, the laser is spending more time at that pit and burning, therefore, theoretically deeper. The question is that true? And I haven't seen, like, a statistical analysis
of it. It's funny. What I thought in the past was that the laser wasn't as good in the past, and it's better now. Actually, from what I've read, it's that the lasers today don't burn as brightly as the older ones. The other ones were very bright.
And if you do it slower, theoretically, it would be spending more time burning that pit. So the answer is, try this out. Let us know. When you burn your CD, make sure to choose the lowest speed. Make sure to choose a one-time speed, and then go and play in that player that's not working.
That'll take forever.
But if he wants to just try it.
You know what? I think better advice would be to buy better media.
You think?
Stick with name brand.
That's because, what they said.
Because the die that's used is all, it's all owned by various companies, and nobody wants to pay royalties, so they come up with new dies. And those cheaper brands just have cheaper dies.
And it has to do with the longevity of the media, too. It'll fail sooner, much sooner, with cheaper dies.
Thank you very much for the call. We're going to have to say goodbye. I'm going to have to say goodbye.
Okay.
Thank you. And I'm not going to be able to get to Vince, but Vince, please stay on the line, and I will take your call. Chris Dumphy, thank you for joining us. Goodbye.
My pleasure.
GeekSpeak is, this is GeekSpeak. You're listening to it, and it's over. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. Thank you for joining us today on GeekSpeak. The geeks this morning were Sean, Miles, Dee Dee, Chris, Drew, and John. And I'm Lyle Troxell. The phone answer is Rick Fillman. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Next week on GeekSpeak, we'll be here. I'm tempted to tell you what we'll be talking about, but since I might be wrong, I won't. But we'll be here. It'll be an interesting show, as it is every week after Dr. Don Matika at 10 a.m. on Saturdays on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto, or on the web at kusp.org. Coming up next is Castle Cottage, which is a wonderful show for your kids, so bring them in the room and enjoy. Thank you very much for listening to GeekSpeak. Thank you for calling in to GeekSpeak to participate. I'm Lyle Troxell. For the rest of the geeks and for KUSP, thanks. Bye-bye.